Hello there. Good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're talking with Thayer Phillips, the president and CEO at Retire Safe. We'll learn more about that organization, and we'll also take a look at just where we're going here. I must tell you very honestly, Mr. Phillips, that as I read that, listened to that report, I couldn't help thinking, and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Now, I know, despite what Democrats have charged, I know for a fact that there have been concrete, specific Republican proposals to replace Obamacare for at least half of the time it's been in existence. Where are those? I mean, didn't Tom Price, the incoming Health and Human Services Secretary, have very specific bills? What's wrong with those bills?
I don't know. I don't know. I have people who haven't looked at those for a long time, and there have been quite a few put forth. Rand Paul certainly had one, and maybe was the reason he voted no in the Senate, because he had one. I think that the Speaker will look at all of these. I think the Republican Party is going to look at all of those and the pieces of those and make a decision about what works best.
Obviously, we have one fact of life that must be dealt with, and that is you can't go back, as Thomas Wolfe wrote, you can't go home again. The old health care system, pre-Affordable Care Act, no longer exists in many cases, and so clearly that is not a remaining option. So you've got to go forward with something in the way of a replacement, and I would assume that everyone agrees that it would be a nightmare for the Republican Party heading into 2018, which, by the way, is the current election cycle and has been now for several weeks, that it would be a disaster for Republicans if, in fact, a lot of people, despite all the high premiums and all that, if you like your doctor, if you like your health insurance, all those idle promises made by the president, if there are significant numbers of people out there who are suddenly left, as Nancy Pelosi put it, high and dry, and are not covered in the interim between Obamacare and whatever follows, then that's going to be really bad for Republicans.
Well, I think Speaker Ryan is certainly going to look at that, and they understand that. They know exactly what's going to happen. But I have a real belief in a free market. And from a senior's point of view, we looked at this and said, how does this affect us? And some of the things that maybe they can go back on is some of those cuts to Medicare and to the hospitals and to the doctors and those things that had such a bad effect on older Americans.
Yeah. Now, of course, there are aspects of the free market that may not like what is being talked about, and that is that two of the most popular portions of Obamacare are apparently going to be kept. Two very expensive portions, I might add. One would be coverage of pre-existing conditions, which is, of course, something that insurance companies don't want to do under the free market. They would, of course, like to insure no one but members of the U.S. Olympic team. And the other, of course, is allowing children up to the age of 26 or whatever the age might continue to be insured by their parents' plans. Most of the people I've heard on both sides think those two are pretty much cast in concrete. What are your thoughts?
Well, those aren't going to be pulled out when they repeal Obamacare as far as budget reconciliation, because they can only pull out things that have budgetary impacts. And so those are going to be left, and they're going to have to be dealt with. And I think those are some of the things that Speaker Ryan talked about when he said, we're going to try to pass some of these things along with it, things that I think they can get some bipartisan support, obviously, because that was part of Obamacare. Now, how do you pay for that? That's an interesting question, and that's going to be where the rubber meets the road, and our organization, certainly with a lot of others, are going to wait and see where that money comes from.
Now, there have been two things that have been bandied about over the years in arguing about health care, which is an argument that goes back to Harry Truman, three quarters of a century, and the two things that I've heard most recently that are supposedly going to help use in at least one case, market forces to try and hold down costs, that would be eliminating barriers to all insurance companies competing in every state, and then the other, tort reform, so the doctors don't feel that they've got to cover their butt by ordering an MRI if somebody shows up with a hangnail. Let's look at first tort reform.
Well, if you look at tort reform, it's kind of a double-edged sword. When you have a fee-for-service, then there's not much of a hindrance to order that extra test or that extra thing. And it also protects you from tort if somebody says this, you didn't do enough tests or you didn't do something. So they go hand in hand. And I think that that is absolutely something that needs to be looked at. It is something that ties the doctor's hands, and with our legitimate society that is just ready to sue everybody, what a way to free up some of that money and get away from that fee for service, which is another part of health care that we needed to reform even before Obamacare, even back from Hillary Care when they were looking at health care reform. That was one part that we needed to get away from. And that would be very helpful to get rid of, or at least to put some caps and some place so the doctors know what risk. And then the insurance companies can know what the real risk is, and that can free up a lot of money.
Yeah. And then, of course, that other item, which I'm sure rankles more than a few conservatives who hate the very notion of the feds telling the states what to do, but that is the Fed telling the states, open up your borders. Every insurance company gets to compete in your state. Will the market forces be sufficient to keep down prices based on these two things?
I think they will. It may not be that you've got companies that can go statewide, but certainly in a regional situation, because there's regional costs that are different. And so those have to be looked at. But if you could get in some regions that can go across state lines, it really makes sense. There's regulations, and state insurance commissioners have a great deal of power, and so there's a trade-off, and there's going to have to be some give and take to really make that happen. But it is a plan that could work, and I think we at the very least need to give it a whirl and see if we can't take advantage of whatever market forces there are to keep prices down.
You know, I understand the notion of scratching one's back and all the other things that go behind the scenes. I don't concur with it, but I understand how it operates. But for the life of me, I don't see the vested interest here in keeping some insurance companies out of certain states, unless you literally have a case of an insurance company that's allowed to practice, say, in Alabama or Massachusetts, and nobody else is allowed in, if they've actually bribed their way into a monopoly situation. I don't even understand what's going on here. Who is benefiting from this?
Well, some people say that the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance companies had some of those kind of makeshift monopolies, and that may be or may not be. I do know that places like New York State had such onerous laws about what you must do to even sell insurance in that state, that it was difficult to break through. Only the big people had enough of the lawyers to be able to go into states like that. Those regulations are the things that need to be smoothed out. Those are the things that need to be taken care of so that we don't have just one or two companies that could sell insurance and have small and medium size be able to compete along with big guys.
And Thayer Phillips is our guest. Before we get any further, you are the president and CEO of RetireSafe.org. What exactly is this firm?
Well, we're a 25-year-old nationwide bipartisan to nonprofit organization, and we educate and advocate for older Americans. And we believe that smaller government and the power of the free market are good things. And we also believe that a government should keep the promise it made concerning Medicare and Social Security. So we want to maintain those benefits. We don't sell anything, and we have about 200,000 direct mail supporters and 50,000 email activists who are very active in giving us their ideas and their opinions about the issues that affect older Americans.
All right. Now then, to what I consider to be a critical factor, and that is that a lot of other countries, steal essentially intellectual property. It is not cheap nor easy to produce new medical drugs which are safe. And drug companies have to do an awful lot of research. There are an awful lot of dead ends and the like. It costs a lot of money.
$2 billion.
And many countries out there place ceilings on the amount that drug companies can charge in their countries, and the drug companies then turn around and they get back that extra money in the United States. And all we need, I believe, is a law which says that no drug company may sell drugs in this country for more than they're selling them for in other countries. And if that happened, since you could never ignore the U.S. market, then you would see prices here go down, and prices in the freeloading parasites out there, the prices would go up.
It's an interesting concept, and people have talked about how to deal with this, because you're absolutely right. We pay for a lot of the innovation for the world and do that. But what you would get there is a race to the bottom, and it would get into a spiral to where nobody would be innovating, and we would lose the breakthroughs that we're going to get.
They would just simply charge more in the other countries. If you could possibly develop the next drug that, let's say, wipes out cancer, not that that's likely, but just for an example, there's no reason for you to stop innovating or race to the bottom with anybody. Just simply make the parasites start paying their fair share. And if Germany or Italy or Canada doesn't want to do so, then let them go back to the dark ages of drugs. I don't care, as long as they start paying their share of the freight.
Yeah, and the option is that, and it's happened quite a few times, is drug companies say, fine, we won't sell it there. And those countries have very limited formularies and end up not having access to some of the life-saving drugs.
Which, of course, they wouldn't do. I mean, there would be an outcry in the countries, and, of course, they'd have to knuckle under and actually make their consumers start actually paying the price.
When you have government controlled and run one-payer like some of the European countries do, sometimes the citizens don't have an idea that they don't have access. They don't.
Oh, if there was a cancer cure, let's say, that was available in the United States in a free society, they'd know.
I think it's
and the rich ones in those countries would be rushing over here.
And they do. Where do they? You know, the princes and kings of other countries come here to get their operations, and it still happens. And I guess that makes me feel pretty good that we have a pretty good healthcare system here.
Yeah, but again, to me, the bottom line is very simply that the other countries they would kick and they would scream and they would yell and they would whine, but they couldn't deny a true breakthrough drug to their people. So they'd pretty much have to just cough up the dough.
Yeah, I think there ought to be a coalition that gets together of the drug companies and go over that. I hate collusion. I hate monopolies like that. I hate oil cartels, and that's our free market belief. And so there's got to be a way to get around that. But Jim, I absolutely agree with you. There is a problem. And why is America paying for the price for everybody else? It's not right, and it's bad.
And this law would be, first of all, who could vote against this? And this, I can't imagine anybody who could vote against this. Then that would force the hand of the other countries, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, it's out on there, it's on the table, and something that I hope the Trump administration and congressional leadership will continue consider. Now then. Other things that might be on a shopping list of the Obamacare replacement, things that I didn't bring up.
Well, there's things that happened when Obamacare came into being, and some of the things that really made us mad. The first big thing was pulling $700 billion from Medicare to pay for it. That just wasn't right from the very get-go. You kind of look at that and say, well, the president said, we're going to take $700 billion out of Medicare, and we're not going to reduce your benefits, and we're not going to lower the quality. Well, if there was $700 billion in there, and you could do that without lowering benefits or quality, well, then let's go ahead and do it, put it back into Medicare, and extend the financial viability of Medicare, and put it out there, rather than taking it and spending it on Obamacare. Those cuts are out there, and we need to restore those payments. We need to restore and make Medicare whole. So that's one of the things, as you look at a replacement, that the Republicans are going to have to deal with and look at, because, you know, that's money that some Republicans may want to use to help pay for whatever that replacement is. And we were against using money out of Medicare to pay for Obamacare and have to be the Democrats. We're going to be just as against any Republicans that want to cut benefits and quality of Medicare to use it to pay for whatever replacement. It's not right. It's not the way it ought to be done. And they need to get rid of that. They also need to get rid of this Independent Payment Advisory Board, and that's hopefully going to be pulled out when it's repealed. But it was a bad way to do business, almost against the Constitution, and it got out of any legislative or judiciary oversight.
Now, what's the name of this this board again?
It's the Independent Payment Advisory Board.
Right.
Some people called it the death panel.
Yeah, exactly.
I hated that. But because what it really was it was a poor way to do business. And it was a way that again, circumvented Congress. And it was a dangerous.
Well, we're coming up on a break here that doesn't move. I want to get a full look at the so-called death panels and some other aspects of repealing Obamacare in just a moment. We're talking with Thayer Phillips. He is the president and CEO of Retire Safe, an organization of 400,000 nationwide supporters dedicated to preserving the options and benefits of older Americans through advocacy, education, and the power of free markets. And before we take a call here, let's go back to the topic that was on our lips as the break intervened a moment ago, and that would be the so-called death panels. Please offer your explanation of what needs to be changed there, including your lack of comfort with the term death panels.
Well, the death panel was a political use to get people's attention, and it really did. But what it really was a independent panel, a little bit like the base relocation panel that Congress, so that you could close bases around the United States. And this Independent Payment Advisory Board, they were going to be independent of anybody, and if certain levels of increases over the year over year happened to Medicare, they were going to cut. They had the freedom to cut Medicare wherever they wanted to, use an axe, a bludgeon to cut across the boards, rather than saying where are the problems, how can we correct the problems. It was just a poor way to do business from all aspects. What they ought to do is look at ways to increase the quality, ways to get away from fee-for-service and get into take care of the whole patient and care coordination. And one of the good things about Obamacare was that it set up some of these experimental places where they could go in and do some projects and do some one-off experiments to find out what worked and how to get away. Medicare Advantage is a good idea that has grown because it says Medicare, you give us one payment and we'll take care of the patient. And all of a sudden you start getting discounts to health clubs for seniors. You start getting silver sneakers. You start getting people who are paying for wellness types of things because they know if they do that, they will save money over the long range. And it's that type of focus rather than this bludgeon of an IPAB.
All right, to Ken in Eureka, California on the Jim Bohannon Show with Thayer Phillips. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Jim. You know, I put a certain amount of thought into the whole problem of medical care and the medical business and so forth. And if I look at it as medicine and the medical business as a commodity, in the law of supply and demand, when the demand is high and the supply is low, the price is way up. So I feel that there should be, you need more supply. We need more doctors, more hospitals, more medical providers of every kind, medical technicians, more competition in the medical field. I also see that part of the problem is endless government regulation and discourages people from going into medicine. I think that our colleges crank out way more lawyers than they do doctors. But I'm a plumber.
No, but you can't very well, you know, you can't very well just simply tell somebody. Maybe you can do it through incentives, for example, on interest rates on your student loan or what have you. But you can't just simply say, you three over there, you want to be lawyers? Well, now you're doctors.
No, I completely agree and understand that. But on the other hand, if you said to students, we'll send you to medical school if you will go into, a public health service for 5 years after you get back. And if you fail in doing that, then you can pay the student loans that you whatever otherwise
All right.
would have.
All right.
But if you reduce the amount of, for instance, under Obamacare, I heard there was a tax on medical devices. And I'm saying, we don't need a tax on it. We need more competition in medical devices. We need more people producing more innovations in medical devices, not endlessly regulating it so that people say, gee, I don't want to go into that field and participate because there's not only is there no profit in it, but there's no incentive about it.
Okay, well, let's let our guest offer some thoughts about that, Mr. Phillips.
Well, I absolutely agree. And one way that you don't get doctors to come into the field is when you say we're going to keep cutting Medicare payments to doctors and make it less and less profitable for them to be a doctor and accept Medicare patients.
At some point, don't we have to, I mean, if this system does not completely collapse, don't we have to at some point force doctors to take Medicare patients?
I don't know about forcing. I think there's ways. Again, I hate forcing.
Well, okay, I hate it too. But if either you force them to take Medicare patients, or you increase the payments they get for Medicare patients, or else you have where we are now. I don't see what the fourth alternative would be.
I don't, and I like your second one. Let's increase the payments and make it more profitable, and make it so that they can maybe through tort reform or other places lessen and the reduction in regulations lessen the cost to operate their office, so they don't have to have two people who just try to wade through the claims and the regulations and who aren't doing anything to help a patient. That's that lower those costs and make it more profitable for them to do it. I do want to say on this on the medical device tax, what an onerous way to do business. And the gentleman is absolutely right. Our people want to age in place. They want to grow old in their house. Devices are making it possible for them to do that more and more. We ought to have all the innovation. If we keep people in their houses longer and out of institutions, the cost of healthcare drops tremendously. It's a great way to do business, and I agree 100% with him. We ought to be encouraging that type of innovation.
Let's go to Bill in Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Bill.
Thank you. You ought to send a little note to your competitors. Because of them, it is so joyful to get to listen to you at 9 o'clock where I am.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because they're nuts. But anyway, I got a couple of things I want to talk about. One of them is death panel. Now, I'm old enough that when I had a problem with my prostate, my urologist would do tests and this, that, and another. And then when I saw him a few months ago, he said, well, we don't need to do that anymore. I said, well, why? I still have an enlarged prostate. He said, well, you're of an age, they, quote, have decided we don't need to do any more tests. I consider that kind of a death panel. In other words, somebody's made a decision about my care that's a third party to my doctor and me, because he didn't agree with it, but that's what he had to deal with.
And let's say as a result of the absence of those tests that a condition develops in Bill and he dies prematurely, then I would have to ask you, Mr. Phillips, why would that not be in that instance, that hypothetical, a death panel?
Well, I can't dispute it, and it would be a terrible thing. And what would keep him from suing the doctor and saying you should have done this test?
Yeah, but of course that's kind of a lame answer after the fact. You know, I'm going to sue you for $1 million. Of course, I won't be here to enjoy it, but my family will.
They will have a good time with it. You know, that's maybe hopefully not a very often occurrence in America, but that happens all the time in England. And that's exactly, they look at a quality age year and say, I'm sorry, your age is such that we don't do that anymore for that age. And I like to think that we're going to head away from that. And hopefully we can do that when we start looking at long range health and taking care of a care and saying, let's take care of this person for their whole life.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add, Bill, before we go to the break?
Thank you. My experience having worked locally for one of the two major hospitals is, in fact, doctors' hands are tied. And it's getting harder and harder and harder to get a doctor because of the low reimbursement rates. The other thing is President Obama is on record disliking Medicare Advantage as a threat to his one-payer program because they become a third party, which he views kind of as a for-profit thing. So I think that's a real difficult thing. The other thing is I'm not letting Bush off the hook either. I don't think he created it, but he allowed it to happen with Medicare. You got the infamous donut hole. So on amounts that you are allowed to get on your Medicare, you reach a point where you exceed the limit. And I have a prescription that even now with all those heavy discounts is $45 a month. But when I hit the donut hole somewhere in October, which means I still have 3 months to go, that medication, which treats my atrial fib as a blood thinner, now goes to over $400 a month.
All right. Address those two, if you would, and then we'll pause there, Phillips.
Okay. I think the point about the donut hole is one of these places where the Republicans are going to have to look and make some decisions. The pharmaceutical firms sat down with President Obama and they looked at how they were going to pay for it, and they pitched in and said, we're going to pay this much for the donut hole. It's a lot of money. It's tens of billions of dollars a year that they're putting up. What's going to happen if they repeal that? What's the Republicans going to do about that donut hole? My feeling is that anything you can do to get people to take their medicine, it reduces in the long run hospital stays and the cost of health care, and just helping people take their medicine is a great thing.
Ounce of prevention, pound of cure. It's true.
Absolutely.
Jim Bohannon Show, as we speak with Thayer Phillips. He is the president and CEO at RetireSafe.org, which is an organization working to preserve the options and benefits of older Americans through the free market. This is Janine, who calls in from Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri, KRMS listener. Hello, Janine.
Hi.
Hi.
I can tell you how to cut the cost of medical care very simply. I don't know what the paperwork end of it would be, but I went to my doctor to ask for some blood tests to be run. I was refused because the doctor couldn't do it under their administrative management and because the insurance company would not reimburse it. So I took it on my own to go get the blood test run. I had to get them drawn somewhere, and the only place that would do it was the hospital or drive to the lab. The hospital informed me that if I was going to submit my claim to insurance, which for me is a Medicare Advantage, the cost of having the blood drawn was $45. If instead I wanted to pay them cash and submit the claim myself, the cost is $9. That is the cost of administering all of the billing and insurance claims and the paperwork and the bed debt and the uncollectibles, 80% of the fee. And it's a very similar amount if you go down the line and ask for surgeries, for medical treatment, for office visits, for all of that. I'm 60 years old. Back when I was a kid, my parents didn't have much money, and they paid for the doctor's office. They sent the claim in, and they got the reimbursement. Even if you had to set up a drawing fund of some kind for low-income people that was there for their first claim, and then the reimbursements went back into that account, and the only thing it could be used for was medical claims, that would cut the cost dramatically, because when the hospitals and the doctors don't have to bill, their costs go down.
All right. So what about that there?
Once again, you cut regulations, you cut the paperwork, you cut the red tape, and let people do what they do best, and that's treat patients and let doctors sit down and look patients in the eye and decide what's the best way to treat them. That's the simple part. Let's keep it simple. A lot of the people I talk with at expos and seminars, older people come up to me and say, we've lost our common sense in this nation about how to do things. And that woman that just talked to us, she talked common sense. And dang it if it doesn't make sense.
All right. We've got more to come. Stay with us. More calls for our guest and continuing the discussion on the Bohannon Show in just a moment. And Alex calls in from Dallas, a Cliff listener. Hello, Alex. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Good. I have a kind of a comment, a question, world into one. I'm listening to this healthcare discussion here, and it's very interesting because I've been thinking a lot about it because of the refill and replace. I'm thinking if there's a way to get maybe some kind of preventative healthcare requirement, you know, maybe like in a bill or maybe written into some kind of legislation that would, you know, require people to get into a wellness type class or some kind of function that would benefit them, and then that would lower, you know, our costs on the other side, because people would be getting the nutrients and all the preventive health care that they need.
Well, goodness knows if, in fact, we could find a way to make people do that, our health care bill, Thayer Phillips, would plummet, would it not?
Well, it would, and some employers have used the carrot rather than the stick and said, hey, if you go into this wellness program and lose weight or do some of these other things, then we'll lower the amount that you have to pay for your health insurance. And they've been able to do that on a one-off way. It's the same way that Medicare Advantage offers discounts to healthcare to exercise places and the Silver Sneakers and other programs that encourages them to do that. You can't legislate obedience and maybe New York thinks that they could tax us on our big gulps and keep us from drinking sugar drinks. But at the end of the day, there's got to be some way. Maybe let them in their health HSAs, healthcare accounts, give them some more money or some more freedom if they meet certain goals of health. It, you're right. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
To Helene in Inglewood, Florida. Hi, Helene.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Phillips, lots of problems. I think people need to start looking at their medical costs, whether it's Medicare or whether it's a private payer. Like the woman brought up, when she went in for her blood test, she paid $45. Guess what? If I walked in and said I wanted blood tests, you know what that cost would be to me if I didn't have any health insurance? $1,000. I'll give you just one.
$1,000?
$1,000. I fractured a heel bone. The ride to the hospital cost me $350. I could have taken a limo. Then
you could have taken several limos, but go ahead.
Yeah. Then it was $10 for a generic Roccoset. $10 for one pill. Then they took the x-rays. Then they said, well, the doctor that took the x-rays didn't trust those x-rays from that hospital. So then he wanted to still take another set of x-rays. So that's a double x-ray. Then the physical therapy for riding a bicycle for 10 minutes was $145. I think when people get a bill from a hospital or a doctor, not what they pay, but what they are billing, they should take a look at Band-Aids, $250, a box of latex gloves, $25. But because the medical insurance pays for it.
Yeah, we don't bother to shop, and of course that just winds up coming back to bite us in the butt. What about that, Mr. Phillips? I mean, there ought to be. I'm not in favor of price controls per se, but the kind of things outlined by Helene are ridiculous and obscene.
They are, and some, a lot of people look at it and say you've got to have a dog in the fight. You've got to have a little piece of it that makes it worth the time for you to take a look at those.
Fine, have a little piece of it, but don't let the hospitals sit around and I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's like a department store offering you a chance to use their water fountain at $50 a pop.
Well, and if the hospitals or there's only certain places you can get x-rays, then you don't have much of a chance to shop. And if you don't get anything, that's why these medical savings accounts work so well, because you spend the money up to a certain point and it's your money. And if you can save it and go out and get those services, it makes sense. And I think the Republicans are going to use that, these health savings accounts, and expand that use, because it helps for you to pay attention to what it actually costs, and you begin to take a look at.
Why doesn't the market force come to play here? I mean, I would think that in the case that Helene noted, I mean, I would think that it would pay me to start a hospital lab that does blood work and x-rays and the like, and I could charge half of what she's being charged, and I could still make a handsome profit.
And the only way that keeps you from doing that is you don't have the authorization, or you don't have the regulations won't let you be a claim, or you're not in that insurance company's network, or on and on and on.
On and on and on. I get the picture. All right, we're going to pause briefly here with the thanks to Thayer Phillips. Again, his website, retiresafe.org, as we've looked over the issues that are going to be facing Congress as Obamacare is slowly repealed. Stay tuned. We've not heard the last of this one, I can guarantee you. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.